You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. When Ingham County's prosecutor Stuart Dunnings III was recently charged with a wide range of prostitution-related crimes, it refocused attention on human trafficking in Michigan, people being manipulated, forced to sell their bodies for sex, or used for cheap labor.
It's something that we have never been without in the United States. We even fought a war. Everybody knows that. And there is an assumption that that indeed ended slavery. It did not end slavery.
That's a clip from a new documentary on human trafficking in Michigan called Break the Chain. It's premiering next month. And filmmaker Laura Swanson is with us. Now, welcome to the program, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
And with us also is Debbie. She is a survivor of human trafficking. She is in Break the Chain, and it is very good to have you with us, Debbie.
Thank you for having me, too.
Laura, what goal did you set for yourself in this film?
Well, I think there were many goals to begin with because this issue is incredibly complicated. But I think the main thing is to get people who aren't used to this issue possibly interested in it and to kind of question what they typically see in the news and media.
And in all of that, what do you think are some of the main myths and misconceptions that you're hoping to bust with this film?
I think the main one is that it doesn't look how we think it looks. Like, I think everybody has this idea of a perfect victim, and those don't really exist. You know, the Taken scenarios.
The Liam Neeson movies.
Yeah, karate chopping yeah. people to safety everywhere, everything. I mean, certainly that does happen, but that's not the majority of the cases. And I think people really need to start reframing the way in which they see human trafficking so that we can amend our laws and legal system to accompany what we need to do to get resources and to provide the best support for victims and survivors.
You feature two people in this film, one a labor trafficking survivor and one a sex trafficking survivor. Mm-hmm. I want to listen now to a clip in which a woman explains why so many who are sexually trafficked stay with their pimps, the very people who are imprisoning them.
It turns into us against them kind of way, like right. her and her pimp against us. So she's not going to trust us because a lot of times the pimp has been abused her so much and manipulated her so much that in her mind, she believes that that's all she has and that's the only person who is going to be good to her.
Debbie, you are a survivor of human trafficking. Does this clip reflect what you knew?
Well, when I was trafficked, I was 13 years old. And so the person, I was with him until as an adult. And so he kind of raised me. So for me, it was really identifying him more as a caregiver than anything.
13. How did that begin?
I was at the Jackson County Fair that day. And, you know, in my mind, I was coming from a bad home situation, was looking in and out of the foster care system and wanted some type of family. And in the 70s, you know, you heard about fairs and how they were like a family.
Yes.
All the people that didn't fit in anywhere were like a big family. So I went there searching that day for a family and happened to run into him. When I ran into him, I was hungry, hadn't really slept. And so at that time, he was just saying all the right things. You know, he was talking to me. He was paying attention to me. He was interested in what I had to say. He was very nice to me.
Everything you needed.
Everything I needed. And then by that evening, it was, why don't we leave the fair and you just show me around your town? So once I got in the vehicle with him, within an hour, we were headed towards Detroit.
And then what?
I stayed there with him for the first night. The next day, he brought me back to Jackson and told me that he was going to give me $20. And if I wanted to be with him, that I could be with him and I would be sitting at the bus stop in an hour. If I didn't want to be with him, there was $20, basically have a nice life. But I'd already been dealing with a lot of abandonment issues. My mother had left when I was about 10 years old. My father, you know, was a chronic alcoholic and, you know, I was in and out of foster care. And so this was another person that wanted to leave. That was treat, you know, that treated me well. And so I sat at that bus stop for that whole hour. And in my mind was that he was not coming back. So I was kind of relieved when I seen him pull back up. I got in the car. And at that time, I still didn't know what he had planned for me. You know, this was just somebody that just took interest in me and was nice to me. When I got back in the car that day, went back to Detroit with him. And by the next day, I was prostituting.
And how long did that last?
Until 1999. He was arrested in 1992 the FBI actually arrested him and tried to get him on a prostitution empire, but could only arrest him for tax evasion. But for me, it was now I'm out here on my own again, and then started substance abuse just to mask a lot of the feelings and the hopelessness that I felt. And then it wasn't until 1999 that I had made a choice to get out of everything.
When I think of 13 years old, I mean, the mind boggles to think about that. Mm-hmm. But this is the kind of thing you're finding, isn't it, Laura, in your research?
Yeah, I'm finding that a lot of it is, you know, people want jobs and people are in situations in which they come from poor home environments or are vulnerable in some way. And someone approaches them understanding that person's vulnerability and is going to use it for, you know, some sort of financial gain. And, you know, I really don't understand when people say that the choices made by survivors are the ones to blame, because you're 13 years old. You know what I mean? You're 13 years old. You didn't have anybody. How are you expected to make adult decisions?
How much of a problem is this in Michigan? I know it's hard to pin down with statistics, isn't it?
Yes, that's the biggest problem.
Why is that?
Well, because if you think about how people have generally viewed human trafficking in one sort of, you know, trafficking schema or scenario, and you think about how we're constantly learning about how this issue actually happens and it's adapting and changing, and laws and things like that need to change with it, we haven't had accurate representation and accurate reporting numbers, because this is a crime much like sexual assault and domestic violence, where people don't necessarily report it or identify themselves as being victims or survivors, and most certainly don't trust law enforcement. So you're not going to get the appropriate statistics. But what you can say is we know that it's a huge business because money's involved. We can see the connection through everything that we do with, you know, finances in our world. And if it's that big, if it's like a $32 billion industry per year, we can see that, you know, it's everywhere because it's humans.
Well, I am thinking of that house fire in January in Novi.
Yes.
You had five Mexican undocumented immigrants who were killed. They were all living in the basement of a home owned by the owner of the restaurant where the five men worked. There were even two teenagers. Smoke detectors had been disabled. The basement was not to code. There was no egress. And no one in the neighborhood knew that they were there. People were living. And the owner and his wife actually are facing federal charges of harboring these undocumented immigrants. So it tells us, doesn't it, that it is everywhere and we probably don't understand that.
Right. A lot of times we don't – well, for me, I didn't identify myself as a victim. Mm-hmm. You know, I was always told that it was my choice that I wanted to be there. And so after a while, you start believing it, especially when you don't have – what else do you have to go back to? My father was not somebody that was concerned about me disappearing. And then actually when I was arrested and put into a juvenile home, he actually took me right back to that person and was paid and then drove back off. Mm. So, I mean, a lot of times people don't talk about or say what's going on in their lives because they feel that this is the best it's going to be.
And for the labor trafficking, that's everywhere, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I think it's everywhere. And I think we have to be kind of realistic about how we're all connected to it. I mean, if you think about our society, and we're kind of built on cheap labor. And we really like to not pay as much for things as other people in other countries pay for things. And I think that's where we all become connected to it, not even just by the places we frequent, but the things that we buy on a daily basis. Mm-hmm.
What are you doing today, Debbie?
Well, today I am a certified peer support specialist, and that is a person with lived experience that help other people that are still struggling in their recovery. Mm-hmm. For me, once I got myself out of that environment, I found that, you know, I needed more help than just getting off drugs, and I had to go in and receive mental health services because of the trauma that I experienced.
And in such formative years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was just getting in there and talking to somebody about my history and the trauma that I've experienced and the abandonment issues and things like that. It really helped me. And then in that process, they talked about – actually, Obama had talked about peer support and people being hired to be peer support specialists. And so now it is a career path for me. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of training for the state on health and wellness and recovery from any type of a trauma or experiences that they have. I'm in prison right now working with the women and some of the men to become certified peers so that they can help other people that are coming into those environments. Because for years I never talked about my history or my past and didn't know that I needed services. So,
what do you hope, Debbie, will come from people watching Break the Chain, watching Laura's film?
Well, I think that it'll bring awareness. A lot of times we hear people say, well, what does this have to do with me, or how is this going to affect me and my family? You know, and sometimes I think about, well, you know, at the fair that day, how many girls did he talk to before he talked to me? You know, I'm sure I'm not the first person that he talked to that day. And I took my son to a fair, and I was looking at all the young girls that were at that fair. Most of them come there with their friends, not their family, and, you know, and they're just hanging out, and they're vulnerable. So, you know, just realizing that being more a part of what your kids are doing. A lot of times families are so multitasking, and you may or may not have two people in the home, but they're all constantly working, trying to meet the responsibilities of, you know, of parenting and bills.
Financial responsibilities, yep. Sure.
And, you know, and the kids are out there raising themselves sometimes, and they're not always meeting the most. Like, I have my daughter right now is just broke up with her boyfriend and moved into one of her girlfriend's homes. And her girlfriend is her same age, but she's stripping, and I think she's working at an escort agency. And so I try to tell my daughter, you know, don't get lured in by the attractiveness of all the money that she's bringing in and the possessions that she has, because it can be glamorous when you think about it. Like, I want all of these things, and look how fast she's making the money. And so my fear is that she would be tempted just based on the fact that, you know, her friend is doing mm-hmm. it. Her friend might rationalize or justify, you know, some of the severity. But then I think about what her friend is going to go through later on. Because even though she may feel like she has control right now, there is a lot of psychological damage going on at the same time.
That you can certainly testify to. Mm-hmm. Laura, you're mm-hmm. putting the final touches on your film.
Yes.
And you're going to be premiering it in Okemos on May 10th.
Mm-hmm.
How will you get this out for people to be able to see?
Well, that's kind of what we're working on right now, because we've had a lot of people interested in figuring out ways to distribute this, maybe through universities or even high schools, using it for trainings in some sort of sense. So we're premiering the film, and then we're going to have a whole bunch of feedback forms where anybody who's at the premiere gets to talk about the ways in which they think this film is going to be best distributed. And we've also had an interest from a certain nonprofit agency to possibly executive produce and help get more funding to do more specific stuff. So we're not 100% sure, but what I know that I want is I want this to be able to be available to everyone, because I think that that's the most important thing, is not limiting information just to people who have access to information, you know.
Laura Swanson is a documentary filmmaker. Her documentary, Break the Chain, as we say, premieres May 10th in Okemos. Debbie is a human trafficking survivor who is in the film. And it was a pleasure to meet both of you and talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, yeah. Nice to meet you.
Thank you for having us.